Kim Appa here, Jared and Robbie back. Weird Kim Appa, this one. Robbie's in Delhi at a hotel, so he might drop in now. I know, I'm going to Delhi, aren't I? I'm going to Delhi. I'm thinking of my future plans. Sorry. You're in Mumbai. I might be in Delhi in a couple of weeks. I'm in London. We're watching a cricket game in the background as well. What? Oh! Oh, you are. So we were trying to work out before if you were ahead or behind my stream, and it turns out you're ahead of my stream. So Alyssa Healy's just gone out. This is why it's going to, this is another reason it's going to be weird. Not only do we have Robbie's dodgy internet Wi-Fi issues in his hotel room at the moment, we also have the fact that this is the only time we could record. And of course, there's a World Cup semi-final being played at the same time. But you know, this is just how we roll. It's how we roll. So looks like that was a wobble ball. Let's have a look. Does it nip back, Robbie?
It does
doesn't nip back.
And it's drizzling,
huh,
by the way?
Oh, yeah, a little bit of rain. So, Alyssa Healy, she was dropped as well, right? 5 or 15. She just didn't look herself at all today.
No, she looks so off-color. It's funny. It's good signs for us, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, you have to bowl them out. Rakshit was just asking about, like, can India beat Australia? And I was like, you just have to bowl them out. Because otherwise, even if you get them 7 wickets down, they could still make 350, right? Like, you just have to do that. So, well, now we have a rain break, Robbie, so we can just we don't have to worry about the game anymore. A couple of topics for today. We might be doing another episode on the weekend as well, because I'm heading out to Dubai. So, I'm sure we'll get some more stuff out there. But I've got this theory, and I want to put it past you. Remember when Sanju Sampson was batting down the board, number 4, number 5, wherever they were batting him in those games. And we were sort of saying, how much time do India give him, and how do they work it out, right? Like, because it's not an easy decision to make. You know, you've got a World Cup coming up in 6 months. I was thinking that the same thing happens for Virat and Rohit, right? Because you've almost got like two eyes in two different directions, right? You've got one eye on their direct form at the moment, and then you've got this eye off in like a mile in the future of like of the World Cup. Like, it's so far away. And so I saw fans, like, I don't know about you, I got messages from, like, and I'm not, I say fans, but like people in cricket going, Rohit's done, Virat's done, this is over. And I was like, guys, they've played just like a handful of innings. Like, how do you kind of work out their form over the next 2 years without getting too worried about like a little dip, because they're older and we generally worry about players when they have a little dip, but also you don't want to lose the knowledge, the experience, what they've done in previous World Cups, right? Like, you might say there's another younger batter who's ready to go, but you don't know that they're going to be fine against the best bowlers in the world. Like, it's not an easy selecting minefield for the next 18 months or so, unless they just both make shitloads of runs.
Yeah. So how far are they from scoring shitloads of runs is the question, I would say, right? Yeah. Players of that age, I think there are two factors that determine if they will be selected or not. One is their fitness, how fit they are, how healthy they are whilst the tournaments, whilst they're preparing for the tournament and the World Cup, and if they will get selected, if they're fit enough to be selected and injury free to be selected. Number two is rhythm. I think rhythm is going to play a huge factor in them being able to score runs. One of their biggest challenges right now will be the fact that they are not playing enough cricket along the way to have rhythm, right? I'm not talking about form. Form is very different from rhythm. Rhythm can lead you to form, right? And you can be in some really good form in a series and then have a break for 3 months and then come back, and because you have no rhythm, you'll go from a series from a form to a series of no form, right? Mm. Now, it's about how well they prepare themselves at this age for them to be able to have rhythm when they go into a tournament. That is going to be, I think, extremely crucial in them being selected in tournaments to come. Now, it all depends on their preparation and how much time they spend in preparation before each series or tournament that comes up for them. Now, they have a little bit of, it's not too much of a break before they play South Africa. They have 3 one-dayers against South Africa. And I think they will play, I don't know if they're playing some more one-dayers against New Zealand. I'm not quite sure. But if they are, then there's that as well. If there isn't, then there's a relative gap. after that, they play the IPL, so they will have some games under their belt, so they will have rhythm during that point in time. They will find rhythm, even if they don't have it when they start off. And then, again, depends, pre-series to series, how much time they have as far as finding rhythm is concerned, by the means of playing match simulations, by the means of playing first-class cricket matches. Mm. For them, it's about playing matches, to a couple of matches to get rhythm, right? So even for Virat, even for Rohit, the likes of them, you can bat for however long you want in the nets, but they won't really get the feel of it because the achievers have a very high rate. So practice will never really replicate the match rhythm for them. They have to play matches to replicate.
I agree with you. I think you and I talked about this a few weeks ago of, like, you know, almost having your own fake cricket matches, right? Mm-hmm. And going through that, because I think once you, it was funny, I was watching Usman Khawaja in the nets at Lord's before the World Test Championship. And what's Usman Khawaja? 37, 38, right? Like, he's played so much cricket. And I just watched him going, he's not, like, this is, it's just not turning him on. It's not activating that part of the batting brain that you need to be able to activate anymore.
Yeah.
And, you know, I remember, I think it was Ricky Ponting, you know, like lots of players, especially the great players, he did a lot of nets when he was young. When he was older, he stopped doing as many nets because he didn't feel like it was really getting him in the right headspace anymore. And so it's that sort of that connection of, and it's hard because as an older player, you don't play as much in general, right? Like, you know, when you're younger, you know, when you're real, like, I think we think of professional cricket, but the amount of cricket you would have played between the age of, what, 16 and 22 is phenomenal, right? You're playing age group cricket, you're playing senior cricket, you know, some random, you know, a bank calls you in for a game, you're playing all these different games, and the older you get, the less cricket you are even available for, right?
Yeah.
So it really does change. And then you've got, on top of that, the ability to sort of keep that right. So I think you're right with the rhythm. But let's pretend we're selectors, right? Like, what are we looking at? Because I think a lot of people are like, oh, they failed a couple of times. They're under pressure. And I was like, well, that shouldn't be how you should be doing this. You shouldn't. I don't think they should be judging them that much different than anyone else. What you're looking for me, is signs that there's something really wrong, right? So if you're watching them and you're like, that looks terminal, right? And everyone's seen a player like that. I mean, you could argue that that Virat in Test cricket showed some of those signs, but Rohit was the one in Test cricket. You're just like, that just doesn't look like he's going to be able to make consistent runs in Test cricket anymore. And so you're looking for those signs. Other than that, I think you have to almost retrain your brain to be like, maybe they even need extra games available to them so that you don't overreact, because it's quite a big change if you just bin them and then you go to the next World Cup without either of them, right? Like, that's a big thing. So you don't want to be like, oh, they didn't score runs in an entire series, maybe they're done.
Yeah, no, that's not, that shouldn't be the case. And I think that level of empathy a selector needs to show, and understanding as well, right? Because they've probably been there in those shoes themselves in the past. So just that level of understanding that, okay, it's going to take a little while for them to get that rhythm going, so we need to be a little bit more patient with them and offer them the opportunity to play matches before they go into any series. So if that can be recreated for them, that can be created for them, you know. One of the things I would do when I was going through, say, practice sessions where that didn't feel hugely motivating for me or something I didn't look forward to, I challenge myself by playing with a middling bat and say, I have to go through the whole session without getting out.
You love the middling bat, don't you?
I love it. It just, it does so many good things to a batter. It forces it,
if I was using it, Robbie.
It forces you to be disciplined, because if you have to play well, if you want to hit the ball without edging it, and you can catch inside edges that hit your inner thigh and close to the box, and that can be painful, right? So you got to really watch the ball. You got to watch it into the middle. You got to, you know, play close to your body. You got to do a lot of things right. You got to be very decisive with your footwork. You know, have to go front foot or back foot very quickly. So it keeps you really, like, switched on. It forces you to, like, it corners you to be switched on, which is why I love the middling bat, you know, for preps.
So,
and then so, the other thing is, after you play with the middling bat, you use a normal bat and you feel like you have so much of acreage to hit the ball. Like, I can do anything with it.
So the 2027 World Cup is in South Africa, right? Or South Africa and Zimbabwe. Is there an element of when I'm more thinking about now. So we've talked about the selectors and having to kind of think differently a little bit and, you know, understand exactly what they're doing. When do Rohit and Virat start to think about how they prepare for South Africa specifically? So as you said, there's some games in Australia, there's some games in New Zealand. You know, I don't have the full ODI schedule in front of me, but if they play all the games, I'll play a little bit. But is it worth like them, one of them going out, or maybe both of them going out and like running a camp in South Africa? Right. And literally being like, let you know, because we, you and I both know it's probably, it's almost the place with the best netballers on earth, South Africa, right? So you can get a bunch of guys who'll be able to bowl to you in a game and game situations. You can have 3 or 4 days in whichever South African area you want. You could even have a couple of different kinds of pitches. Is it worth going and trying something like that? Or is that a bit too extreme?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. And they'll have the time to do it as well. And, you know, they can do it themselves. Or BCCI can do it for them if they want to do it. It certainly should be offered to them. I think it's a great idea, Jared. But it's something that's amazing. They can go to every venue. They can go to both Zimbabwe and every venue in South Africa and just kind of go and have open nets on these grounds and go and play match simulations where they bat for 30 overs with each other. And if they get out, then they have to, you know, it's minus 50 runs or something, whatever. Like, you know, create a simulation where they bat through and familiar, and they don't need to get familiar with these conditions, but just kind of get used to the bounce of those places. Like,
well, it's not even familiar, is it? It's just what you don't want to do before South Africa is just be smashing the ball around in India, right? Like, you want to feel like you know, because in the, if you go back to their old schedules, right, when they were playing, that's four formats of cricket. They're playing the IPL, they're playing Tests, they're playing T20 and ODIs. They're traveling around the world and they're just generally, without even trying to, getting experience in all these different places and building it up. It won't take them long to like get back to that level of understanding how to bat on South African wickets. Like, you know, Virat's played some of his best ever innings in South Africa, right? Like, you know, phenomenal, the Joburg test and all this sort of stuff. So it's not as if he needs to relearn it like a kid, but there's no point him just hanging out in, you know, I suppose he spends a lot of his time in the UK, so maybe he gets some of this practice anyway, but that's harder to do in the UK because there aren't as many high quality grounds available for you to rent out with net bowlers of a high quality, right? Yeah. Like he can get the net bowlers maybe and the nets, but it'll be hard for him to get a full ground in the UK that's like, you know, of that level. You know, maybe he could rent Beckenham or St. Paul's. I'm trying to think of something in North London that he could get, but it's not as easy. In South Africa, as you know, those facilities are almost always available. And every, you know, I remember the Scotland team went there on a warm-up when I was with them. And we played like a combined sort of second 11 from Durban. The quality was so high. Like it was ridiculous, right? And and so we know that you can do that sort of stuff. So I think this is where I'm kind of getting to of, and I've been pushing this for a long time. And, you know, Virat and Rohit are now in the perfect situation to be able to do this, of this next level, Robbie, of what, you know, you go back and you look at what the boxers used to do, right?
Yeah.
A long time ago. And like, you know, I've just finished reading Norman Mailer's The Fight, right? And there's little details in it about how they prepare and the sort of boxers they bring out to prepare for each fight. Like, you know, and you go through, this was happening in like the 60s, and we've never really done it in cricket to a high level. We've done it to a low level of like, we're in the nets now, we're facing a left armer, can we bring a left armer in? But that's very different than, again, getting them in the game situation, right? And saying, we're going to set this field for you in a game, right? You know, Rohit's biggest issue is going to be, if he doesn't play a lot of cricket, it's going to be facing left arm bowlers with the new ball, right? And in South Africa, he can find four left arm bowlers, bring them and literally give them a new ball each and just ping it, right? Over and over again. So that he's just used to that, right? And you know, these are the sorts of things that I think are the next level. And, you know, there's some really interesting stuff about, you know, how some of the American athletes and some of the footballers are preparing. That's it. Even though these are team sports, and you're an expert on this sort of stuff, they're team sports, but they're no longer team sports in the way that you prepare, right? Oh. You have to prepare as an individual.
Yeah. So that's what I keep saying, right? I keep saying this. Yeah, it's a good ball, wasn't it?
It was a good ball.
Very good ball. Again, scramble seat. So I was saying that today, cricket is as much an individual sport as it is a team sport. So, you know, you got to prepare individually, but you got to deliver results, or you got to deliver performances that are team-based, right? So that's how you ideally want to be as a cricketer. You know, earlier it was quite different. I was actually doing a podcast today in another language where interview, so to speak, and they were asking me about, you know, how different cricket is now. It's very different from what it used to be.
Brian Lara used pot plants to work on his placement. John Wright glued his glove to his bat. Sachin Tendulkar dug up practice pitches. Tatenda Taibu cut the top off his bat. Claire Taylor used a hockey grip. Steve Smith was from tennis. Dean Jones would call phantom runs. And Victor Trumper turned the nets into a war zone to survive. The best batters in the world do whatever they have to make runs. We have told their stories in our new book, The Art of Batting.
No, exactly. I think that's something that's really worth sort of understanding. And I remember when I think it was KP and Alistair Cook, like, had their individual batting coaches that they would go back to, right? Yeah. And, you know, it's been more popular in Asia for a long period of time. But even then, you sort of you used to default to the coach of the national side. Whereas once it got to that point where teams are like, even or players are even willing to bring their coaches around with them, right? Or, you know, and then Zoom takes it to another level as well.
Sorry, I'm interrupting. One sec. Just go on, keep going on your monologue. I'm just coming. Someone's
ringing. I'll keep going on my monologue as Phoebe.
But you know what? I'm just going to comment. But somebody like, no.
So Robbie is commentating. So I've been commentating. What have I been commentating? New Zealand, England. Robbie's commentating Australia, India. So between us, we're covering a lot. And we're also trying to watch the Women's World Cup at the same time. I just think it's funny. I suppose. So I don't know if we've ever talked about this, but Shaun Masood. So he also was staying in North London for a little while. And he called me in when I was at Lord's one day to go to a cafe with him and sort of talk through some stuff. And he'd already been working with the Crick Viz boys, I think, a little bit. I think he'd been working with, I forget the name of the coach. You might Gary Palmer, who is the coach who does a lot of international cricketers go to. Mm. But I think he was the KP Cook coach I was mentioning before. Mm. And one of the things I was talking to with Shaun, which is like, before each series, you almost want to know what kind of bowlers you're going to face, how you want to prepare specifically for that, where you're going to try and score, right? Which balls you're going to try and score off. Like, you know, because your main scoring shots are just going to be different for different kinds of bowls and different kinds of conditions, right? Like, if you're great at playing the cut shot, going to India against seam bowlers doesn't really help you, right? It's very rare that you get a short wide ball or any room in India to be able to play a normal kind of cut shot, right? Whereas if you're going to Australia and, you know, you're going to get more balls to cut, even if they're not wide, just because the length is going to bounce up. Yeah. So I think you get to that sort of situation of like, I don't think cricketers are breaking it down step by step enough. I know that you're someone who does do that, but you watch a lot of cricketers and they turn up to places and you can tell that they haven't really thought through step by step by step. And I think that's the next thing of like, how do we get the players to understand, you know, how to build a structure for a series or, you know, a World Cup or whatever that may be.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really fascinating part of cricket that we haven't really scratched the surface of yet.
Not yet. I don't think we have. In fact, in India right now, you know, when I first hired Praveen Amre as my batting coach, I was ridiculed in the newspapers. And the Times of India put out something back in 2012 about how I've hired a batting coach and how it's a pretty futile thing to do and all of that. And anyway, there was only one guy who called me up and said, I think you're doing an amazing thing. And, someone just got out.
Wait a minute. I'm going to watch this next ball.
I think it's going to be reviewed though.
Nah, that's down leg, mate. That's not hitting the stumps. Yeah, maybe clipping the outside of the leg.
Call, yeah, umpire's call, I think.
But look at where she's bowling. She's got her hand above. She's like past the perpendicular. She's bowling wide on the crease and it's swinging in. Man. No. But what I mean is, look, if you look at the angle she's bowling on, I think that's probably missing leg. It's going to be close anyway.
Yeah, close one, I think.
Who called you? You're about to do a name drop and then.
so Shankar Basu called me up. You know, the strength and conditioning coach of RCB, and he was the strength and conditioning coach of the Indian team, S. Basu.
Yep.
So he called me up and he said, he's like, I don't know if anyone else has told you this, but I think what you've done is the best decision for yourself. You couldn't have made a better decision for yourself. And like, this is incredible. And I promise you, there will be a lot more cricketers who do this. And true enough, as in 2 years from then, 3 years from then, practically every Indian cricketer had their own bowling coach or a batting coach. You know, because that you really get to know the. That's probably going down. Oh boy,
definitely going down.
Somewhere down by my. Yeah. You get to know that when you have your own batting coach or bowling coach and your own personal coach, so to speak, you are basically getting one person to share your whole cricket with, right? To go on that journey with you, right? And then you're not contending with everything by yourself, with your own mind, and contending with everything that comes with playing cricket at that level. Right? It's a shared experience now. And now that it's a shared experience, what that allows you to do is get different ideas to the same, different perceptions to the same challenges that you're going through or you're trying to navigate through or better yourself at, right? And that helps. She is struggling. I'll tell you what, Vinita Singh is not the quickest bowler in the shed, but she moves the ball well enough to cause enough trouble to some of the top batters in the world.
I mean, it's swinging. It's just, you know, it's coming back. That's good bowling. I just think, I think that I remember talking to a couple of international coaches about this. I think I did one on a radio interview and I said, don't you think the future of international coaching is really more of like, how do you work directly with with all the coaches that all the players have? Because they're all going to end up with, as you said, a batting coach, a bowling coach. You know, even simple things like Chris Gayle had his own strength and conditioning person who traveled around with him, right? Because otherwise he had to deal with a new strength and conditioning coach every team he went to, and he was playing for 25 different teams. So all these sorts of different things make sense, right? And so I was talking to all these coaches and they were all like, no, we're still in charge. And I went, it's a different kind of in charge though, isn't it? Because essentially what a head coach is or a batting coach is now for an international team is someone who has to deal with the player and the coach, right? And be like, let's, between the three of us, we're almost like a committee. You're going to be working with this person, but we still need it to work within our system.
Yeah, I agree. If that team's batting coach, how bad did that drop? If the team's batting coach isn't insecure enough, then sure, that's possible. But if the team's batting coach is like, no, this is still I'm in control, then it's counterintuitive. It doesn't serve anybody's purpose. It doesn't serve his purpose. It doesn't serve the player's purpose. Neither does it serve the team's purpose, right? I think the coach's job, especially the batting coach's job, has evolved to a place where you organize practice to make sure that the batters feel as well prepared as possible. And especially at the IPL or the level above that, you kind of speak when you're spoken to, so to speak, right? You help when you're asked for help. Until then, you just provide. You're providing a service, so to speak. And you can inquire with them if they need feedback, or if there's something that you're working on that you want feedback with, and then you give them said feedback. Outside of that, if they have their own batting coach, if they have their own mentor, or they have their own coach that they're working with, then you just either find a way to make it a committee amongst the three of y'all, or you say, hey, let me know what you're working on. What do you want to look at something? And then it's just a feedback loop. You create that feedback loop. Because every coaching relationship should be one that's built on trust and not on authority. And I think today it's taking a while for that transition to happen at a team coaching level.
Yeah, and I think also that the people who are quite often head coaches haven't come through your level where you had your own personal coaches, so they don't really understand that side of things, right? So sometimes it's just some of these things are generational. All right, Robbie.
Yes.
I would like us to build our ideal fast bowler using individual skills from different players and never using the same player twice.
Yes.
I have in front of me 15 different metrics on what makes a great fast bowler, right? So this is like, you would have done this with your daughter or your son, where you have to go into one of those stupid cafes and you build a teddy bear and you have to pick the teddy bear and you have to, do you know what I'm talking about? You know what I mean? They're everywhere, those things. They're so annoying. You end up with all these overpriced teddy bears in your house. It's like, I could have bought a teddy bear that was cooler than this, that my kid hadn't put a weird sweatshirt on.
Lego sets.
Oh my. You know about my family and Lego, don't you? Have I not sent you photos?
No, you haven't told me.
So, it was my wife's birthday yesterday and we got her Lego. Because she's so obsessed with Lego. My son's obsessed with Lego. My daughter's becoming obsessed with Lego. We have a grand piano at the front of our house covered in Lego, right? No, like, just, it's ridiculous, dude. I got my wife the Lord's Lego set yesterday, or the micro mini brick set or whatever it is.
Oh my god.
So she's probably inside now making that. Actually, there we go. I think she was like, all right, you ready?
Yeah. So you were, finish your sentence. Sorry.
No. So fast bowler, we are building a fast bowler. Let's start with heights. Whose heights are we using?
So height, the first metric. Actually, can we do one thing? Can we go through the 15 metrics and then go through it one by one?
Yeah. I've got height, speed, accuracy, wrist position.
Slow. Weight of ball. Accuracy. Height, speed, accuracy, wrist. Okay.
Yeah. Weight of ball, which we can explain when we get to it, but you know what I mean.
Okay.
Brain.
Okay.
Theme.
Okay.
Swing.
Okay.
Slow ball. I've written here lungs, but I suppose I just mean how long can you bowl for, if that makes sense.
Fitness.
Bounce.
Do we put fitness in for lungs?
Yeah, it could be fitness. I just more, because you can be fit and not bowl really long spells. Like, I really mean someone who can bowl abnormally long spells.
Okay.
Let's be honest. I've just put this in so we can fit Neil Wagner into this.
Spell length. I'm putting spell length.
Ball.
Okay, wait.
Yeah, spell length.
Slower ball, spell length, and then 11.
Old ball. How you deal with the old ball?
Okay.
And then quality of your bouncer.
Quality of bouncer. That's 12.
Okay. I have no idea. I just wrote them down before. This comes from a thing I was doing on Glenn McGrath where I haven't done the video. I might do it for the Ashes, but where I basically went through and I ranked Glenn McGrath in about 25 different metrics, right? To try and work out what he would be in a video game, right? Like, what's he 99 on and what's he 82 on, right? So swing bowling for Glenn McGrath is like, what, 72? Because he very rarely swung the
ball. First of all, in life, where are you finding the time to do this nonsense?
I was doing it while you were fixing the Wi-Fi. This is my job, Robbie. It's my job to come up with nonsense like this. If I don't get this out of my head, do you know how crazy I go?
Yes, I know.
Oh, Yorker. Yeah, we should have Yorker. Yeah, let's add Yorker. Yeah. Thank you, Ruckshit. All right, Yorker as well. All right, so 13. Okay.
Can we add a length ball as well?
Yeah, I did actually have that in the McGrath one. I had length, because length is the most important ball, isn't it? You could also do back of length, because I think that's the second most important. All right. Are you happy with this now? We do actually need to build the bowler at a certain point, not just keep adding. I'm not saying we couldn't add another 10 or 15 between us, because we could, and I have them in my phone if you want me to. But all right, we have this 10 or 15 now, or how many we have. Height. I think when I say height, I mean release point, right? Because release point is very important. So the two tallest bowlers ever in cricket's release point are Muhammad Afan and Jacob Oram, right?
With release point, not Joel Garner?
We never measured his. I don't think Joel Garner would be that high, though, because if you look at his action, he's only 6'6". And
no.
We've had got bowlers. Yeah,
Joel Garner was... No, you're 7 foot.
No, he wasn't 7 foot, mate. I've stood next to him. He's not 7 foot.
He must have shrunk with time.
No. He's... wait a minute. Curtly's 6'6", so Joel Garner's 6'7".
No.
He's 202 centimetres, mate.
He's not 6'7".
Well, he's 6'8", then. He's not 7 foot. He's nowhere near the tallest bowler.
I thought he was 7'1".
Joel Garner... No. Muhammad Afan's the only bowler who's registered at over 7 foot. There you go. Rakshit's looked it up too. 6'8".
Okay.
So I think it's out of Kyle Jamieson, Bruce Reed, or Joel Garner. So I'm happy to put Garner there because I tell you why. The reason that people used to say that Garner was 7 foot is because most fast bowlers weren't over 6'4" in those days. Right. So he might not have been the tallest bowler ever, but he's probably the tallest compared to other bowlers of his era. There weren't fast bowlers of Joel Garner's pace before. Right. So you didn't get people that tall and that fast at the same time. So I'm happy to put Garner as this.
Oh, no, no. For me,
are you happy with that?
I'd like to go Curtly Ambrose. I don't want to go that tall as well. Because
Curtly Ambrose is shorter.
I don't care. He was harder. Like his release point, I think, was higher.
That's what I was saying before. That's what I like that. I like that. You know, Ollie Robertson has a freakishly high release point. Really, really high.
Really?
Yeah. That's one of the reasons he's hard to face because it comes from so high and he doesn't look that tall. One day, Do you know about the wingspan? So when we were kids, were you taught that fingertip to fingertip was exactly the same as your height? Were you taught that?
No. I'm
so sure most people in the world are taught that when they're kids, and it's completely wrong, right? And so you have there are players in the NBA who have like 8 foot wingspans, right? But are only 7 foot tall. And I think it's Dwayne Wade is like 6'3" and has like a 7 foot wingspan, right? And so it's the same in cricket. But we've never measured fingertip to fingertip, Robbie, right? So we don't even know what these guys, their arm spans are. And then on top of that, it doesn't really matter what your height is or what your arm your wingspan is if you collapse when you're bowling, right?
Yeah.
Like do you remember Suleiman Ben?
Yeah.
Have a look at how much he collapses when he bowls. He's still taller than most bowlers, I'm sure. But he loses like half a foot because he falls over as he bowls. All right. Curtly. I'm happy with Curtly. That means we can't use Curtly. We can't use Curtly for anything else now. That's it. Curtly's done.
Yeah. I'm okay with that.
Okay. I'm always happy with Curtly. Curtly's who I used to imitate bowling in the backyard. I told him that once on commentary. Okay. Speed. How fast do you want to go? Because we don't want Shoaib Akhtar, do we?
No. You lose a lot of swing and seam, don't you, with it?
Exactly. If you go too quick. That's why I think Cummins and Bumrah are like almost more ideal pace.
Yeah.
So we can't, I don't think we should use Bumrah now because I think he'll come up later. So if we put Cummins as pace, but is that 88 or do we want something slightly quicker than 88? Do we want like 92?
92? I'd say 92.
Jofra.
Because there's swing and seam there. Yeah, Jofra for sure. Yeah,
because he can still move the ball. All right. Accuracy.
McGraw.
You don't want him for brain for later on. We want him for off the seam. We use him for accuracy. What about Mohammad Asif, Vernon Philander?
Asif, yeah. But Asif, wouldn't you use him for swing?
Couldn't you use Jimmy for swing?
Couldn't you use Bowie for swing?
Cricket boards actually make watching their games almost impossible now. I spend almost as much time trying to find where I can view it as I do actually following the action. That is why I use NordVPN. They let me find all the cricket I want to watch while protecting me from the nasty side of the internet. Nord will free your cricket matches. Grab your exclusive NordVPN deal by going to nordvpn.com/goodareas to get a huge discount off your NordVPN plan plus 4 additional months on top. It's completely risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Watch every match with NordVPN.
So if that's the case, I don't mind using Vernon or Asif. Surely they're the two. I'm sure Clark's the only other one I can think of who's as accurate as those two. Because what you're talking about here, when we're talking about accuracy, these guys were so accurate as seam bowlers that they're almost spinners, right? They move you around the crease.
Yeah, sure. Vernon or who would you say? Vernon or who? Asif.
Vernon or Asif?
Oh, tough one. I'd say
Asif. Is Asif a little bit quicker than Vernon?
Yeah.
Then let's use him.
Yeah, I'd say Asif.
All right. Wrist position. Who's got the best wrist? Which is this now a different kind of podcast, Robbie.
Shami?
Oh, Shami. I hadn't thought of Shami.
Shami's wrist position.
Right. Yeah. Trying to think of someone else. Ryan Harris.
Srisant.
Another one. Srisant had a locked wrist, didn't he? Praveen Kumar. A lot of those guys who came out of the MRF had really, really strong wrists, didn't they? Yeah. They were like almost surgical wrists.
Yes.
I'm trying to think of anyone else. Oh, Sean Pollock?
Oh, good as well, this position.
All right. Who do you want? Best wrist.
Ooh.
Sexiest wrist.
I'd probably go Shami, man. Who would you go?
Shami. I was actually just thinking then it's probably Hadley.
Yeah. This is great.
Shami or Hadley, who do you want?
I'll let you take that one. You let me take the previous one.
I'll go Hadley. Because Hadley's not going to... I don't think Hadley gets on any other thing, right? Like, because I think even though he swings it a lot, there are probably other guys who swing it more. Mm. But Hadley, if you go back, and anyone, have a look on YouTube, guys, it's just rock solid every single ball. And I would say the other guy that reminds me of that is Praveen Kumar. He's another one who's just like almost every single ball.
Like, yeah, he had the ability to... like move his wrist.
No, but both of them have the ability, but I'm saying if they wanted to just come in perfectly every ball, they could do that. And that's, I think that that's not something that every single bowler can do, right?
Yeah.
Like Kyle Jamieson, I was watching Kyle Jamieson in the T20s the other day, and like he's really good with his wrist, but sometimes he falls over a little bit, right? So he can't get his wrist straight. Whereas Hadley and Pravin Kumar, their wrist, they never fall over, right? They're just completely in the right position every time.
Yeah.
All right, weight of ball. Do you want to explain to people what we mean by weight of ball or heavy ball?
So basically, a cricket ball weighs 5.5 ounces. And how much leeway do we have with that? None, right? In international cricket, there's no leeway.
It's like it's a little bit milligram on either side. Yeah. So yeah, but it's basically that.
Yeah. So I think it depends on age group to age group. I think at a certain age group, I think the under 16s, it's a 4.5 ounce ball.
I don't know the measurements, but women and underage men do use, slightly lighter ball. But once you get to the top level, the ball is the same, except that when you are facing it from certain bowlers, it feels heavier. Yeah. Agreed?
Yeah.
Okay, so the science behind this, I don't know if you know about the full science.
So you don't mean weight of the ball, literally, you mean the heavy ball.
Yeah, I said heavy ball.
No, you didn't say heavy ball. You said weight of the ball, Luke.
Well, that's what I meant. Heavy ball. You know, I wasn't talking about which ball we're going to use in this thing. I meant
weight of the ball.
What I mean is,
when you say weight of the ball, you mean weight of a ball. But when
if you face Brett Lee, right, the ball hits the bat quite hard, but you can face someone like Ryan Harris, right, who feels twice as hard, even though he's not bowling any faster.
Heavy, man. Oof.
Who's the heaviest you face? Flint? Did you face Flintoff? He must have been pretty heavy.
Heavy, but heavy and quick, huh? Like sometimes, like you don't need to be quick, but you'll feel the impact on the bat. Yeah. But Flintoff was both quick and heavy, and he had this awkward action, right? It was just like it was unorthodox a little bit. Was Flintoff?
I like that. I think Flintoff's a good pick there. Like I think him or Harris are two. I think
you know, a combination of being very good heavy ball.
Shark because if you go back and you watch Callis when he hits the pitch, quite often you can see that you can tell when a bowler does it because the bat sort of when someone defends it sort of wobbles more. And the bat sort of like what the batters will say, and you can explain this better, but because there's more, it's not just that they're strong guys, it's that they have a lot of backspin on the ball. And so the ball sort of spins up more and it hits higher on your bat. And so you're constantly feeling like the ball isn't hitting the right part of your bat. And so it sort of jars your hands, doesn't it?
Yeah.
All right. Do you want Flintoff? Do you want Harris? Or do you want Callis? And or is there anyone else? I can't think of anyone else who's in their level.
Ball, the heavy ball. I'm certain Courtney Ambrose would have been heavy. Walsh in his prime would have been heavy.
Did you face Harmison? Was Harmy heavy?
No,
because he feels like he's more bounce than heavy.
Yeah.
Mitchell Johnson?
No, not heavy.
No, because he's doing a different kind of action, isn't he? Yeah. I think Flintoff's a good pick there, man, unless you want to go with someone else.
No, Flintoff's good. Flintoff's actually good.
All right, here's a fun one. Brain. And we could have split this up, and we still can. There's two different kinds of brain, right? I think there's outthinking, a batter, understanding what they do and everything else. But there's also a very simple thing of memory, right? So we haven't used Glenn McGrath yet, but Glenn McGrath can go through every single dismissal of every batter and tell you how he got them out. Not just when he got them out in the order he got them out, but specifically how he set them up and how he got them out, right? Mm-hmm. And that really helps when you're a bowler because the next time you play against them, you know instantly what you need to do against them. But let's just use generic brain, how smart you are. I've got a bowler for this, but I want to see who your bowler is for brain.
My bowler for brain.
Yeah. Do you want me to say mine?
Yeah, I think
I think it's Bumrah.
Yeah, for sure.
he says that, but you didn't say it. Don't just claim mine.
but for me, I was thinking, okay, initially when you're speaking about it, I was thinking McGrath. I was thinking, I initially thought Bumrah, but I thought more McGrath, but I thought more maybe Waseem Akram.
Waseem was on my list too. I think McGrath is memory as much as brain, right? Whereas Bumrah and Waseem Akram are different, maybe because they have more weapons, but you see the brain on show more because they try to get you out in more different ways. Do you know what I mean? Like you can watch them bowl and say to yourself, whereas McGrath is a little bit like, I will just bowl the same ball over and over again.
Why don't we have discipline as a metric? Because there's only one.
Anything you want.
Well, there's only one bowler in the world who'd won that discipline metric. That would be McGrath.
Done. That was easy. Well, McGrath's on. Do you want Wasim or Bumrah as brain?
Wasim.
Done. I like that. I think that's good. Best seam bowler?
Shami for me.
Shami's really high, I think. And also, in a world where everyone's bowling the wobble ball, he's still just bowling traditional seam. He doesn't care. He's just like, I'm still so much better than you. I don't need your new magic ball, guys.
Yeah.
I mean, McGrath would have been high.
I was just watching.
Do you know what?
Oh, Shami.
I reckon I'd have Kirtley ahead of Shami if we could pick Kirtley.
No, but height. Kirtley's already, we've already got Kirtley in height.
Oh, no. He's fine. I'm fine. Shami, I'm trying to think of who else we would have for pure seam bowling. Would you have? It's kind of hard now because everyone bowls a wobble ball. So it has changed a little bit, right? Like, I'm trying to think back. Yeah, I think Shami's a good pick, man. I don't know if I have like dozens of other I'm sure we could both come up with old English bowlers.
Yeah.
And then you've got guys like, Vernon. Vernon is maybe the other one, isn't he?
Yeah, seen, he was good. He was really good. No, I'd still go Shami. I had a pick between
them. I'm happy with that. I think that's fair. All right, swing.
So many in this. Anderson, Asif.
We can't have Asif, so that's fine.
Okay. There was...
Hoggard, Damien Fleming,
Bouvy.
We've already got Hadley, so we don't need Hadley.
Swing,
Bouvy. Yeah. I like
Praveen Kumar.
I think
swing.
I think I would take Hoggard and Fleming out because, and Fleming might actually watch this and get pissy, but I don't think those guys had as good in swingers. I think they could both move the ball back in. So Southie, again, doesn't have an in swinger.
Trent Bolt? Oh my God. Have we forgotten Trent Bolt? Swing.
But a lot of those guys swing the ball in one direction. Yeah?
Yeah. For me,
if you want to look at both directions.
Yeah, both directions. There was like, there's Asif, there's Bouvy, Anderson, Vernon Philander, Malcolm Marshall. Oh my God.
Did you know the problem with Malcolm Marshall for this list is he's probably in the top 10 percentile in half the things we've already said.
Yeah.
But he's so good at everything. I don't know. It's a bit like, I don't know how you actually pick one of his individual skills that he has. I think for the ability to swing it both ways and control it, it has to be Anderson.
Maybe.
I don't know if there's anyone else. And it's interesting because by the end of his career, he wasn't really swinging it that much. But I think maybe this is a little bit of recency bias because there was a lot of good outswing bowlers when we were growing up, right? Like, you know, I mean, there was just, everyone could bowl outswing, right? Like Sean Pollock bowled really good outswing.
We've forgotten Donald altogether. Donald bowled a heavy ball as well. He bowled rapid as well. He had a great outswinger as well. Could seam the ball around a little bit as well.
I think Donald's like Marshall, though. Donald has so many skills. I don't know where you actually, like, but I'm not sure if he's like 99th percentile. He's like 95th percentile in like eight things, Donald. Yeah. Donald and Pat Cummins are really interesting because they're almost like perfect specimens for their time and place, right? Like what they do. But I don't know how you fit them in. I'm happy with Anderson. I don't think there's a better swing bowler who can swing the ball both ways consistently than Anderson.
Anderson. Okay.
Yeah. All right. Best slow ball.
Oh, it has to be just two of them in the world. Either Bumrah or Malinga.
Ah, yeah, Malinga. That's easy. Have we got Bumrah on the list yet? We don't have Bumrah on the list.
No.
I think we keep Bumrah for something later. So let's go Malinga.
Yeah, I know as well.
What did we call this before? Long spells. Long spells. I want Wagner.
Yeah, Wagner.
Because you can just basically bowl him for 14 overs, right? Yeah, and if we're going back in time, do you know about the tide test, the first tide test between Australia and the West Indies?
Mm-hmm.
Wes Hall bowls the entire session at the end of that game. Like he just bowls the entire session, right? it's not like an incredible thing, right? Because he did stuff like that all the time. Like Wes Hall would just bowl. So it's Hall or Wagner for me. But let's go Wagner on that. Bounce. this is different than height, right? Because there are some bowlers who just get ridiculous steep bounce. So Steve Harmison's what, 6'4", 6'5"? But he gets freakish bounce. And sometimes there are 6 foot six bowlers like that don't get that kind of bounce. Like, I think Chris Wokes would be the same height as Steve Harmison, right? They don't get anywhere near the similar kind of bounce.
So I'll tell you who was most difficult for me as far as bounce was concerned, was Mone Mokhil. Mone was just annoying because, like, off a good length, get the ball to climb, like, hit the top of the bat. I'm like, how are you getting the ball to bounce so much?
Have you heard the Mone Mokhil story about when he faced himself? You know, I had that machine in Dubai where you could face bowlers, and he was facing everyone, right? And then the guy said, do you want to face yourself? And Mone's like, yeah. And he faces like two balls and he's like, this is impossible. Like, he couldn't face himself. Like, it's ridiculous. Yeah. I remember talking to the Australian players and they're like, look, obviously Dale Steyn's the best bowler, but we would face Dale Steyn 10 times out of 10 rather than face one over of Mone Mokhil because he's a monster. It just, every ball comes up at you. I think of all the players I've ever heard, I think Harmison is obviously quite high on that list as well. Mm. I think obviously Curtly, and you could put McGrath up there as well. McGrath's bounce is ridiculous when you go back and look at some of those games. But I think it's a completely different level of what Mone can do compared to everyone else. Yeah. And obviously Garner would also have been there if we still had a chance to put Garner in. Yeah. But let's put Mone. All right. Old ball bowler. Waqar Yunus. Jasprit Bumrah, who's our third?
Was he?
Zahid Khan.
Zahid Khan. Oh my gosh, yeah, Zahid Khan. Old ball. Oh, he was one of the best.
I thought he was so good with an old ball. So I'd go one of them, but I think it should be Bumrah. I think Bumrah's the best old ball bowler of all. I think Glenn McGrath's the best new ball bowler of all time, and Bumrah's the best old ball bowler of all time.
No, wouldn't you want to keep Bumrah for the Yorker?
Well, you could use Waqar for that too. These two, basically, it's the same. These two could just be interchangeable for Yorker or old ball, couldn't they? Waqar and Bumrah.
Yeah. I'd give Waqar I'd give Waqar.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I would go on the other way around. Okay. So Waqar is old ball.
I don't think there's anyone who bowls a Yorker better than Bumrah, hands down.
I'm going to send you some clips of Waqar Yunus bowling.
I've seen Waqar by bowling. It's insane.
But you're not as old as me, so you didn't see peak Waqar.
I've seen peak
Waqar. That 5-year period.
I've watched YouTube, dude.
I understand
YouTube. I've watched a lot of Rob Linder on YouTube.
Okay, let's just put Bumrah in for Yorker then now. Wait, I can't read my own handwriting. Oh, Bouncer. I was thinking Mitch Johnson.
Nah.
Okay. I know a lot of South African and England cricketers who would disagree with you. Do you know who you could have here? Is Steyn. We haven't even put Steyn in yet as well. Again, I like Alan Donald, Malcolm Marshall. They're so skillful, those guys, but in a different kind of way. But you could. I would almost want Steyn or Marshall here because you can't get away from their bouncer.
Yeah,
so Marshall. I commentated with Craig Cumming the other day, and he was just like, he thought he was picking up Steyn right and then went for the hook shot and ended up having his jaw rewired, right? Like, it's just because it's the skittiness. You can't get, that's why I like Mitchell Johnson's bouncer as well. You can't duck their bouncers. And so they're always at you. So Malcolm Marshall for this one?
Malcolm Marshall. I would say Malcolm Marshall.
You know what? For pace, we had Jofra. It should have been Steyn.
Yeah, Steyn had, yeah.
All right. Can we change that?
Actually,
are we okay?
Yeah, actually, bouncer even, you could go Jofra and get Steyn after. Because Jofra's bounces also is immense.
Ross Taylor couldn't see at night or when the clouds were in. Eventually, he had to see an eye specialist who would fix his eyesight. In the 2 years before the change, he still averaged more than 50 in international cricket. The top level of batting talent can basically see in the dark. That is who we are talking about in our new book, The Art of Batting. Head over and order your copy today.
Do you want Jofra or Malcolm Marshall's one? Marshall's one's brutal. Who is it? Who's the England opening batter who, I forget his name, but he never got dismissed in a test match. He went out to face the West Indies, faced about 40 balls. Malcolm Marshall put him in hospital and he never played again.
I don't know who that is.
Yeah. So here's my question to you. overall, and I'm not just talking about your experience, but, you know, talking amongst your friends as well, what is harder to play? The guy who skids it up at you and you've just got nothing you can do, or the more the Jofra one where it can sort of ping up at you off the back of a length and
you think Jofra doesn't skid? Dude.
No, he can skid it, but I think Jofra's more dangerous bouncer is the one where you think it's back of a length and suddenly it's at your throat. That sort of curtly bouncer. So I don't know what's more dangerous because, you know,
I think that's more dangerous, the one that you think is back of a length but just takes your head off.
Okay. So we have...
We go Stain for pace and we go Jofra for bouncer. It's also more relatable to the times.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. There's more bouncers bowl now as well. Length. So we don't have Vernon. We also don't have Malcolm Marshall.
McGrath, length. I don't think there's anyone who
bowls. You gave McGrath discipline. You gave him a whole new, you invented a new category for him. So are we talking about control of length, or are we talking about when you land the ball on a length?
The ability to hit length as often as possible.
Well, that's Vernon then, isn't it? I think with Crickviz, they have him as the most bold in the length. So I think that's Vernon. All right. I've got one here for back of a length.
Back of a length.
So you would have Harmison, Bishop, Harris.
Yeah.
He was quite full, actually, though, didn't he? But his back of a length ball was brutal when he went to it.
Heavy, heavy back of a length ball. Jacques was also saying heavy back of a length ball. You know who had a very heavy back of a length ball? Simon Jones. I played him in a side game.
Yeah, but again, he's bowling a lot more full, isn't he? More because he's trying to swing it quite a bit. Andy Roberts.
Oh yeah, Andy Roberts.
Andy Roberts bowled a lot of back of the length. So did Wes Hall, by the way. So you got a couple of the old West Indians. We don't have Michael Holding either.
Oh, my God.
Again, I put him in that Alan Donald sort of thing of I don't know how to categorize his individual skills.
Like, we have a thing
we don't. We have to get it wrong. These things work better if you get them wrong.
Get it wrong. Right?
When someone later was like, you didn't mention blah, blah, blah. Like, you know, we almost didn't mention Bolt. We haven't mentioned Broad, by the way. Like, there are some very good seam bowlers that just haven't been mentioned at all. Oh, but do you know who I like as a back of a length bowler? Makaya Intini.
Oh, yeah. That's nice.
Because and Colin Croft, because they angle it in, right?
Yeah,
I really like them too.
Or Brian McMillan, back of a length.
Who?
Brian McMillan.
Yeah, but he could barely bring himself to bowl. Like, he barely bowled. I mean, you're right. He was, you know, he would bowl those little powder puff swingers though half the time, McMillan. He looked like he was going to beat you up and then he'd bowl little marshmallows at you. I like Intini or Croft, actually, and Roberts, I think, are maybe three of the guys there. I like Intini for this. Roberts, okay. He was my first thought. All right. Okay, do you want me to go through it?
Yeah.
Our perfect bowler has the height of Curtly Ambrose, the speed of Dale Steyn, the accuracy of Muhammad Asif, the wrist of Richard Hadlee, the heavy ball of Flintoff, the brain of Ozzam Akram, the seam of Mohammad Shami, the swing of Jimmy Anderson, the slow ball of Lasif Malinga, the length of spell of Neil Wagner, the bounce of Mornay Morkel, the old ball bowling of Waqar Yunus, the bouncer of Jofra Archer, the Yorker of Jasprit Bumrah, the ability to hit length of Vernon Philander, back of a length, Andy Roberts, and discipline is Glenn McGrath. So we've missed. Let's just go through this. Walsh, Pollock.
We've missed so many. We've missed too many. Don't even name them. They'll all call us and abuse us.
Vass.
We've missed
Bolt, Southey, Hall. Oh, Truman.
Shoaib Akhtar.
Oh, yeah.
Brett Lee.
So Walsh, Pollock, Donald, Vass, Bolt, Southey, Truman, Shoaib, Lee, Holding.
Yeah.
Broad.
Couple, Dave.
Oh, couple, yeah. And Truman. Did I put Truman on? Oh, yeah, no, I've got Truman here. I'm trying to think if there's any other old. Oh, Lily. We missed Lily.
Dennis Lily. God.
Oh, we could have used him for Brain, too. That's annoying. Yeah.
Sean Tate.
Yeah, but that's just, yeah, I mean, yeah. I mean, if you, once you got Shoaib on here, if you're doing, if you're looking for, so we put speed, but if you're looking for just like, just quickness, right? You put Tomo or Akhtar, so they would be looked after, right?
Mm.
What would Lily be? Like technical perfection or something along those lines? Like the guy who basically invents biomechanics, right? Like he, like not, he basically coaches a whole generation of bowlers, right? So he'd be technical. I don't think Kapil gets in. I don't know if he has a skill specifically that gets into this list. Walsh. How about, is Walsh the best holding bowler?
Yeah.
I think, I've got this theory, and cricketers hate it when I say this, but I think Courtney Walsh is the best stock bowler of all time. Right? Stock because bowler.
Yeah, for sure.
He was obviously he was obviously better than that, but you just couldn't get him away, right? Like, he was just going to bowl at you the whole time. Like,
100%, dude. Like, I can imagine him just going on for, like, sessions after sessions, just bowling there.
Yeah.
Giving you a run.
Like, if they... You know, when he first started, he was like the fourth bowler in that West Indies side, right? And by the end, it obviously he's the second bowler. But if Ian Bishop had remained fit, because Bishop, people don't know how good Bishop was.
Oh, another wicket's like, gone Bishop now. Was, another
wicket. No, go. You say another, a second wicket.
Yeah, another one after the first.
It's been a while. It's been a while. What was that given out for? I thought she swept it.
Yeah, I thought she reverse swept it, right? Yeah.
Am I missing something here? Sorry, the live updates from the Women's World Cup semi-final while we try and work out how to fit all these other bowlers in.
Yeah.
She just missed it? Oh, it's caught.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I thought you hit it into the ground. Wow. Okay, fair enough. Okay, so we got Walsh as our stock bowler. I don't know how to fit Pollock or Donald into our list. Like, I don't know, even if we made an extra skill for one of them. I wonder if there's, is there something with Pollock? No, sorry, not with Pollock, with Donald, that's like, energy off the pitch? Do you know what I mean by that? Like, you watch him bowl, and it's like they're
balls. There's one metric we haven't put in for fast bowlers. Yeah. Intimidation.
Yeah. But that's not Donald. Like, Donald's on that list, but I don't think he's at the top. Who would you have for intimidation? Colin Donald. Croft?
Like, Donald.
Really? But Donald bowled a lot of swing.
Listen, now you're giving away that you haven't played cricket at pace.
I hate when cricketers say this. Every shit cricketer, right, is more used to facing fast bowling that terrifies them than any professional ever is, right? Because every second game we play, every shit cricketer, right, especially a shit batter, is used to fast bowling. Do you know why? Oh, she did hit it into the ground.
Yeah, she
hit it. What?
Yeah, she hit it in the ground. The replay shows that.
I thought that's what I saw. I thought I couldn't work out why the hell she was giving out. So if you're a shit batter, your whole life, Robbie, is facing people who are too quick for you. So you guys, like, I've had this conversation with Mark Butcher before. He's like, you've never faced real pace. I said, everything's real pace to me. Anytime someone's over 70 miles an hour, it's real pace to me.
No,
because I don't have the reflexes or the technique or the game to be able to handle it. So no, for me,
this is
I'm getting hit and yes.
Yeah, I'm telling you, that's different, dude. Like,
no, it is different. But what I'm saying is that's the one thing that an amateur cricketer, I think, can understand, which is the ability to go out and know that this guy's too quick for you is literally something that every single amateur cricketer has gone through.
No, man. Yes and no. But yes and no. But it's not the same, though.
I think there's more intimidating bowls than Alan Donald. I think when he wanted to be intimidating, he'd be on that list. Whereas I think if you go back and watch Colin Croft, every bowl is intimidating, right? Like, I think there's a big difference between those.
I haven't watched
one. Where would you put Mitch Johnson on intimidation? Because it's only one little period of time, but it was incredibly intimidating when it was working.
That was more the handlebar mustache than anything else.
I think it was more the 92 mile an hour bounces as well. All right. So if we give Donald intimidation, which I'm not happy with, but that's fine. I don't think there's anything for Chaminda Vaz here.
Intimidation. Who else is there, bro? Andre Nell, intimidation?
Yeah, but it's comic book intimidation, isn't it? It's not real intimidation. Oh, we haven't put Stark on either, by the way.
Yeah, but
I've missed a few.
Yeah, but where would you put Stark in?
We haven't got Hazelwood or Cummins either. No. I'm not saying that they would take any of these. I'm just saying on the players we've missed.
Yeah.
I don't think we give anything to Bolt. I think Truman was incredible, but I don't think he makes this list. I don't think Lee makes this list. Holding, Broad, Stark. Yeah. I think we've done okay in the shittest way possible, Robbie.
Yeah. What more could you ask? In the worst way possible, we've done all right. I don't think we've done all right. I think we're going to be told so as much in a while.
Yeah. That's fine. Remember, if you disagree with any of these, Robbie came up with this idea, not me.
Sure.
we got some super chats and then we'll go watch this game. Vashak says, Robbie, why are Indian bowlers so poor with the bat versus other teams? Sadly, we can never play our best bowling lineup. Just finish reading your book, JK. Good one. This book.
Yeah, that book. Vashak, I think it's because of the level of competition that exists here that doesn't give you the space to actually work on two skills at the same time, because you're competing with that volume, that many number of cricketers, right? So for you to be able to break your attention down to work on two different aspects from a deep manner, from a deeper perspective, then it becomes a lot more challenging, and then you can't kind of master one skill. And because the competition is so hard, if the competition wasn't as high and then the talent pool wasn't as large, you probably would have found a lot more all-rounders. So even the all-rounders that do find today are guys who have the natural ability to bat and bowl pretty much similarly.
Yeah, I agree with that at a certain point. But there's a couple of things that I would also add to that, which is I don't think India's tail is that much worse than other sides. Right? Like, I think I've done the numbers. It's one of those things that Indian fans are constantly, you know, contacting me to say that, you know, their team isn't as good. But if you look at the actual numbers, it doesn't really stack up. So this is last 10 years in Test cricket, the averages of number 9, 10 and 11, right? So New Zealand averaged 14.88, Bolt, Southee, Henry, Jameson maybe batting at number 9 occasionally, Wagner. Every one of them can hold a bat, so that's fair. Mm. Australia averaged 14, England averaged 14, and then you've got South Africa averaging 12 and India averaging 12. Pakistan, Sri Lanka, Bangladesh all lower. So there might be something within the Asian cricket culture that suggests that the tail enders from Asia are worse altogether, right? I think you can make a claim based on this. But I'm not sure you can make a claim that India's tail is particularly all that much worse than some of the other countries. They're pretty much in the ballpark of the other teams. So it isn't like Australia are averaging 20 with their last three batters and like India's averaging 8 or anything like that, right? Like, it's Australia's averaging 14 to 12. So there's a difference, but it's not a lot. That's an extra 6 runs per innings.
So maybe
it's more when you factor in the opposition.
Conditions are different and then it takes a lot more out of you to bowl.
Yeah.
To bowl quick in the...
Do you know what it could also be? Spinners are not always particularly as athletic, and maybe fast bowlers have the ability to... Although there are lots of spinners you could bat, so I don't know. It's an interesting one. But I like what Robbie's saying as well. I can see that you are... I think in general, cricket in Asia is more of a specialist sport in some ways. Mm. And cricket outside of Asia is a little bit more general sport. So I think that the way that people are trained is a little bit different. But I don't know how far back that goes. Yeah. Yash says, I was reading a study which suggested cricket, specifically batters, have the highest suicide rate in any sports. What do you think the reason behind it is? Taboo, stigma, and mental health. This is a question to finish up, Yash.
Yeah. Heavy much.
The numbers on the suicide rate in cricket are very contested. So there are lots of people within cricket who say that cricket has the highest suicide rate of any sport. There are many other people who say that isn't actually entirely the case and that the numbers were counted different. But cricket has one of the most unique things in the world, which is you are on tour for 2 or 3 months in a row, right? And it traditionally, go back to old school cricket, it was like 4 and 5 months, right? It doesn't have the same kind of pattern that other sports have. And so you're isolated from your family and your support system in a way from that. You then have the high rate of failure in batting specifically, right? So I do think there are issues within cricket. And obviously I've written about Aubrey Faulkner and other players before. But even within that, I wonder if it's just not reported slightly differently in cricket than it has been in other sports. But I know cricketers don't believe that, and cricketers do believe that there is a specific reason why that batters are more likely to take their own life.
Yeah, because I think the complexities are quite a bit. Because imagine this, you're an opening batter, you exist in a team, and you're opening the batting for your team to set up a good foundation, right? And you're batting with a partner. And whilst doing that, you build a partnership there, but you're also competing with each other, right? At no point do you want your partner to score more runs than you. And then on the other hand, there's another dynamic that's in place where you have a third opener sitting outside. So it's very complex because you're competing with each other, but you're also competing with the guy sitting outside whilst trying to play for the team.
While competing against the bowlers.
Whilst competing against the bowlers.
I agree with that.
You know,
and then you've got the touring. I think you've got the failure.
Yeah.
You've also got the fact that if you're a batter and you fail in a game,
yeah,
and let's say, you know, you might only face five balls in that game, right? Like, you're actually trapped in a way that even if a bowler, if you're failing, you're still bowling, right? You're still doing your job. You're still lost in the mundane sort of part of you doing your job, whereas you're not as a batter. So I do think it's fascinating. I don't know if it's been settled 100% with any reports at the moment, but I do think it is something that's
I think it's those complexities that drive this, makes it. And I've seen this. So the thing is with batters also, you have too much time to deal with a failure, right?
Yeah. Emmett says, you missed Bond and Thompson.
100%. Bond, thank you.
So Tomo, we did mention later on. I actually had Bond written down at one stage, but I forgot to mention him. Apologies if I don't. I actually think Bond is another one for pace that makes a lot of sense because he's someone who bowled at his pace but still got lateral movement, right? Whereas if you go back with Tomo, it's a lot more straight, right? So we didn't want Tomo for pace. He wouldn't have gone exactly the way that we wanted to build our bowler.
Yeah.
But if you were just doing pure pace, I don't think there's ever been a bowler quicker than other bowlers at the same level that Tomo was. I don't think he was the quickest of all time. I think there are lots of fast bowlers now that have gone beyond him. But when it comes to actually just how much quicker he was than other people of his generation, there's never been anyone quicker than Tomo. And that's all you're trying to do, right? Like, you're just trying to be quicker than everyone else at that same time. But thank you very much for the super chat. Also to everyone else who's probably put messages in because we missed other bowlers. If, like I said, Robbie has so many social media platforms. If you could just find them all and just remind him of all the mistakes he made on this podcast. And, and we will see you again next week for another Kim Upper episode.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bairam Kazi and Estelle Vassadevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recordings. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make a lot of content like me, you are going to need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up incredible clips from your podcasts and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.